I'm going to warn you that the theme of today's sermon is really going to be live like you're dying, which is a perfect segue to say, please also remember the church in your will. And, you know, think of yourself as you can really leave a huge legacy and not just an empty pew. And you can really be generous because you're dead, and what are you going to do with it anyway, right? Listen now for the words of Scripture from Luke 20, chapter 27 through 38. Some Sadducees, those who say there is no resurrection, came to Jesus and asked him a question. Teacher, Moses wrote for us that if a man's brother dies, leaving a wife but no children, the man shall marry the widow and raise up children for his brother. Now, there were seven brothers. The first married and died childless. Then the second and the third married her. And so, in the same way, all seven died childless. Finally, the woman also died. In the resurrection, therefore, whose wife will the woman be? For the seven had married her. Jesus said to them, those who belong to this age marry and are given in marriage, but those who are considered worthy of a place in that age and in the resurrection from the dead, neither marry nor are given in marriage. Indeed, they cannot die anymore, because they are like angels and are children of God, being children of the resurrection. And the fact that the dead are raised, Moses himself showed in this story about the bush, where he speaks of the Lord as the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. Now God is the God not of the dead, but of the living. For to God, all of them are alive. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So your pastor, Max, and I have been friends for a very long time, probably almost 20 years. And the congregations that we serve are incredibly different from one another. And one of the things that I appreciate most about Max's ministry in my life is that he doesn't want to be me and serve my church. And I don't want to be him and necessarily serve his church. But rather, he wants me to be the most alive version of myself. I have never experienced such a cheerleader for being myself as I have in Max Grant. And I'm just so grateful for that ministry in my life. It's one of the things that I think we're all searching for somebody to say, you be you. Way to go. Don't try to be like me, try to be like you. And I'll appreciate the you you are from afar, and you can appreciate the me I am from afar. And so I have prayed for your coffee house ministry. I'll also admit I mourned a little bit when the thrift shop closed. I really like the idea of thrift shopping in Greenwich. It is its own ministry. And I have cheered you on from afar. So it's a true delight to be with you today. Now, turning to today's text, did any of you follow along with that? It sort of reminded me of let's say, like a Mensa test or one of those tests that I've heard that like first-year law associates have to take when they're applying for a fancy-pants job in a law firm or something, you know, where you're given these tricky, convoluted, logical puzzles. Jesus is asked by the Sadducees, who apparently don't believe in the resurrection anyway. So why are they asking about the resurrection? I think that's probably the solution I would go with if I was asked. Jesus is asked, so who is married to this guy after he marries all of these, married to this woman after she marries all these brothers? She went through a whole family of brothers. And Jesus In truth, Jesus' answer doesn't really answer. I'll give him credit this time, though. He didn't at least answer with a question in his usual way, which is obviously how you end up in the Mensa club known as the Son of God, right? You, like, answer questions with questions. But this time, Jesus actually replies. Now, God is not a God of the dead. God is the God of the living. For to God, all of them are alive. This answer causes me to puzzle a bit more, and then to offer up my usual kind of attitude on deep theological questions for which we don't know the answer, which is like, well, it'll all get sorted out later. Clearly, it's above my pay grade. But I do think that in this answer, there's this connection, a deep connection with the dead and the living. And we all wonder what's going to happen. Even though if you ask me about heaven, I'll probably just say, it's above my pay grade. Now, recently, I attended a funeral for someone who had died under particularly tragic circumstances. The service was one that was not particularly religious because both she and her family were perhaps spiritual but not religious, or perhaps not spiritual or religious. And so the thing that would have been the homily or the eulogy was listed as words of comfort. And as a clergy person, I have to say my first thought was, I'm really glad under these circumstances that I am not the one being asked for words of comfort, because there are situations in life that are so horrible and gut-wrenching and tragic that it is really hard to come up with words of comfort. And my colleague, for whom I was incredibly grateful, did come up with some words. But as I was listening, it raised more questions, because his words of comfort were basically that we were all going to be reunited in heaven. Now, I suffer from ADHD, which is why I spent many times meditating in church, but it also means that I have an overactive mind for thinking of various things. And as my colleague was talking about this amazing comfort of being reunited in heaven, I could only think to myself, is she really going to be excited to see some of us? Would I be excited to be reunited with some of the people? Maybe that isn't heavenly. I'm not sure. I don't know. Is heaven having your childhood bully, like, in the mansion next to yours? That does not sound heavenly. Even if I've grown older and kind of gotten over it, maybe. But in this text here, we have these words, that God is the God of the living, and to God all are alive. Now, to me, that can make sense, because I don't actually know about the afterlife or the resurrection, but I totally can get behind the concept that the message of Jesus and of the gospel is really about the living. That the goal of faith can easily be about the afterlife, but I can go all in on it being about this life. And that it's about living a fully alive, totally vibrant human existence. I believe that Christ, in the person of Jesus, calls us to the here and now, to the where we find ourselves. And that means being freed up from all of the things that keep us from being fully alive. And we all have our own things that keep us from being fully human. Perhaps we're deeply anxious. Perhaps we worry about, you know, having hurt people or done the wrong thing or just can feel yucky inside. Maybe we're incredibly sad. Maybe we have a hard time finding joy. Maybe we don't really live in the moment We've all got things. I find that in my life, I'm blessed to get to be the chaplain for the fire department in New York. In many ways, you know. Guys who talk to you like this, don't worry, chaplain, we'll take care of it. I once fell down. I, like, tripped on a stage. It was the best. By the time I hit the ground, there were 5 guys propping me up and dusting off my pants. It was so, like, I have the best job in the world. I'm completely lucky. And the real thing that makes me completely lucky to have this job is that I get to experience miracles over and over and over again. Like, who didn't love the photos in the paper today of yesterday's rope rescue on the East Side? Pretty awesome. So each year in the fire department, we have what's known as the second chance brunch. It is not the last chance brunch. Sometimes I get them confused, but it is the second chance brunch. And it is a brunch where we reunite people who have been resuscitated with the people who helped to resuscitate them. Now, I have to say that at this brunch, I have never seen so many people be so alive. That basically they were given the gift of life, and that it was a miracle. Now, at the most recent brunch, a longtime friend of mine was honored with meeting the woman who he helped to resuscitate. And afterwards, as we were eating our breakfast together, her mom was talking with him about it. And it became rather clear that her mom knew that CPR had been performed, but she hadn't really realized that her daughter had died, like officially dead. And my friend sort of accidentally just bluntly said, well, she died. And the mother was like, whoa. And I could just see it. It was like a collision course happening. Like, oh, really? Not fake died. No, she was resurrected. And in this moment, I almost started crying, and I am not a crier. I may cry like I may sing like a girl, as you've discovered with my hymn singing, but I don't usually get too emotional. But there was something about experiencing the truth of what resurrection might be that was incredibly powerful. And that I believe that being so close to death at various times is such a gift, because it causes me to be less afraid, to go big, to take risks, to be extravagantly generous, recklessly generous, to ask for forgiveness. For years in my life, if I would have gone up to somebody who I had accidentally harmed and asked them what the impact of my mistake was on their life, I would have thought I would have exploded, that was so hard and difficult. But after trying it out, I realized they're not going to kill me because I'm already reborn in Jesus. So the way to live a fully alive life, I believe, is to believe that you've already been resurrected by Jesus, that we are all in this bonus time. So, Max mentioned I like to tell stories. And one of the ones that I really enjoy telling, I wrote about writing this book. Sort of a Moth Story Hour-esque story. I often have a hard time accepting good things. Perhaps it relates to my Calvinist childhood. The week before my 40th birthday, I had to talk with my therapist about how uncomfortable I am when my friends sing happy birthday to me. The very concept makes me cringe. Just too good. So about a year and a half ago, I had been working on this book of stories of ministry, and at the part of the process where the editor had told me I needed to go and find someone to write the foreword to the book and other people to write endorsements, I collapsed. I really couldn't do it, because in short, what I was told I needed to do was to ask for good things. which I really wanted to avoid. So the book is called Be the Brave One, in part because I serve as the chaplain at the fire department. But you should think that that's a rather ironic title, given that I just confessed to you that I cringe, really cower, when people sing Happy Birthday. So in my desperation, I asked the fire commissioner of the FDNY if he would write the foreword for my book. And I asked him because I respect him, and he writes really well, and he's in the business of rescuing people, and I really needed to be rescued because that editor was really, really being strict about the deadline. And he met his wife 50 years ago at a Sunday school picnic at their Lutheran church. So, like, what's not to love? So after a week, he emailed me with what he had written. Sensing now that this might be too overwhelmingly good, I forwarded it to my wife, who read it to herself while I laid down on our sofa and covered my head with a pillow. I am not exaggerating. That is not a pastor story. I literally had a pillow over my head because I just couldn't bear to hear her reading silently. It wasn't enough to drown her out saying, "Ooh, this is good. So good." Finally, I managed to sit up enough to have her actually read it to me, and it was so good. I couldn't believe it was actually happening to me. I needed to reply to the commissioner, so he knew that I had received his email. There's a sign over at the FDNY Academy that says, "A message not acknowledged is a message not received." So I knew I had to reply. I sent a big thank you, and without thinking about it, I added, "I love you, bro." Now, later that night, I lay in bed reflecting on the day, and I literally started laughing out loud to myself about how ridiculous it is that I had just emailed the commissioner of the fire department in the city of New York and told him that I loved him, bro. My wife, who was drifting off to sleep next to me, felt me chuckling to myself and thought I might be choking. So she asked if I was okay. I said, "Okay, yes, yes, I am okay. But I'm sure lucky I work for the fire department. Because I bet it would be really weird for the sanitation commissioner or the commissioner of the Department of Environmental Protection to have one of their staff members randomly tell them that they loved them. Now, I think we can get away with it in the fire department. Because, well, we all have impulse control issues. It's actually a benefit in the fire service. If you're trapped in a fire and time is of the essence, you don't want someone who is overly measured and restrained. You don't want a lawyer to do a firefighter's job, okay? It's a profession that's great for someone with ADHD. Deep focus when needed, but sometimes a little quick to anger. I once gave my boss a journal for Christmas. On the cover, it was written, "People I'd like to punch in the face, a fireman's journal." It was a joke, of course. But when I went to reorder some more because they were so popular, I'll just tell you, they were all sold out. Clearly, they had discovered their market. So I continued to ponder out loud to my sleeping wife about our collective lack of self-control within the fire service. "Impulse control," she said as she rolled over. "Yeah, I can tell. You fit in well there, Anne." It was such a subtle burn. It's a good thing, perhaps the best thing, to fit in somewhere. And sure, I don't always have the best impulse control. But I thank God that I get to work in a place where I can accidentally email my boss and tell him that I love him, bro. And because a message not acknowledged is a message not received, he emailed me right back and said, "I love you too." On 9/11, 343 members of the fire department of the city of New York died when the World Trade Center collapsed. My boss, Dan, responded from headquarters in the same vehicle with his best friend, the chief of department, Peter Gansey. Dan survived. Chief Gansey did not. I know that Dan wishes he could have said, "I love you," to Pete one more time. So don't waste the moment. Don't be afraid of good things. Don't be afraid of anything, in fact, because you are so alive to the God of resurrections. Go forth from here, fully alive, recklessly generous, endlessly hopeful. Go big, go home, because you're already home with God. Amen.